Rise and shine! It's a great day in the North Woods!
Hello, Voyagers. Welcome to another episode of the Camp Voyager podcast. Another summer season has come and gone, and it was a great, great summer to be up at camp. And so my co-host, Alex, and I thought that this was a good opportunity to look back at the summer a little bit. Alex was up at camp all summer. I was up there for a few days at the tail end, but I kind of missed being a part of all of the in-camp action when all of the campers were there. So I wanted to ask Alex all about the sessions, the campers, the activities, the trips. So that is what this episode is all about. It is a summer recap for 2023. I'll keep this intro really brief, but I will say stay tuned for the end of this episode, in which Alex gives all the details and dates for next summer. Because if you're listening to this podcast and if you're enjoying what we have to say, we definitely want you to be involved in camp in the coming season. So with all that being said, here is a summer 2023 recap conversation between myself and Alex. Alex, welcome back from the woods. Welcome back from the Camp Peninsula. How are you doing?
Good. I'm still getting used to the concrete jungle again. Crawl it out of the woods after 3 months.
As we were getting ready to record this, we're sitting here right now. I don't know when people will be listening to this, but as we are recording, it's early-ish in the day, or in the morning, I should say. So I was wondering, if we were at camp right now and camp was in full swing, what would be going on? I figured we'd maybe be breakfast time, right? So maybe if it was me, I'd be having some hot cereal. Or maybe it'd be like just after breakfast. So everybody'd be up on the hill for inspection, getting those hospital corners ready for the inspector.
Oh no, we'd still be at breakfast. I think the second dish would be coming out right about now. People would finish their hot cereals and now there's probably pancakes or French toast and the meal's starting to wrap up and Turbo's probably walking around trying to correct people's posture and get the show on the road because he thinks we take too much time eating, but it's a great social hour of camp. You know, the mess hall just buzzes when at meals, everyone's talking and catching up and filling their faces. So
when you were a camp counselor and you were in a cabin with campers, when it came time for inspection, did you have any strategy or whatever the word would be for getting your campers in your cabin motivated to clean the space? How would you go about getting everybody enthused for inspection?
Well, every year, every cabin is different. So there were some years where my crew was motivated, like in cabin 8. I think we won like 12 inspections in one session, which is insane because we're only in camp for like, you know, 14 days or something like that. But and in cabin 2, 1 year, it was like pulling teeth, trying to motivate them. We have the American flag for the cleanest cabin, but that's not always a big motivational factor. But I don't know. I still think the best way to do it is to help the kid. You know, if they got a messy spot, just dive in with them and help them rather than try to tell them just clean. You get down on the floor with them and show them how to put their shoes under their bed with the heels out and kind of work alongside them.
I agree with that. And I was thinking I would always, one of the things that I would do a lot of times, I liked when I was a camp counselor to have a game that our cabin would get really into. Like a lot of times it'd be a certain card game that kids, that the campers would be into for a session. And so we'd play the card game whenever we would have some free time, or maybe it was a board game or drawing even at one point, like sketching something. There were just kind of organically, there would always just sprout up some activity that became our cabin's big thing. And so I, a lot of times found during inspection, it was really helpful if you could use that game as a motivator. Like, hey, if we clean the cabin and we do it quickly and efficiently, you know, inspection lasts whatever, an hour, give or take. And it's like, if we do this in a 20 minutes or a half hour, then we can just play cards for the half hour that's left or something like that. So that always seemed to work. But like you said, it just is very dependent on the dynamic of the group, the dynamic of the particular.
Yeah. And there's been people who have said, like, if you guys win inspection five times a session, you know, I'll get you each a bag of M&Ms or something, or a little bribe with some candy, which with a little contraband, you know, it's always motivating.
Yeah, I don't know if I like to bribe the campers with candy, but then here I was just explaining bribing the campers with playing a game, playing cards or something. So I guess it's splitting hairs.
Yeah.
Whatever the case, that's all kind of ancillary. Camp is not in full swing right now. The summer camp season has concluded, although there are a few late summer, early fall trips that are still heading out, some families that are going out on some trips into the Boundary Waters. And the big secret, of course, is that right now is a fantastic time to go on a canoe trip if people can get away from work and get up to camp, because there's far less traffic, quote unquote, far less other groups in the Boundary Waters taking trips. And also the bugs are far less severe, because the bugs don't like these colder nights that we have here in the late summer. So if you can get up there right now, prime time.
Yep. Less traffic, human and bug.
And insect. Yes. But
yeah, insect.
We're sitting here. I was not up at camp for the full summer. I wasn't up there when camp was in full swing, but you, of course, were up there for the full time. And so I thought we would just sit here and we could recap. I want to be a captive audience to just listen to hear how the summer went when all the campers were up there. I guess let's preface this by explaining to people, I'm sure that most people listening know this, but in case they don't, we kind of divide camp up, not only logistically, but also just kind of mentally. You divide it up into three phases. There's the pre-camp, which means it kind of starts in maybe April-ish, right? You start getting camp ready for the summer. So there's a lot that entails, and we'll talk about that. And then after that, the second phase, you have, of course, the camp phase, when campers are up there, counselors are up there, and everything is in full swing. And then you have the post-camp phase, which is what we're still in now, which is when all the campers have gone and camp is kind of closing up shop for the year, but also there are still some outfitting groups that are going through and all of that. So let's start with the pre-camp phase. Talk to me a little bit about what went on in pre-camp this season, and maybe what goes on every season, but then also maybe if there was anything that was unique about this pre-camp compared to other years' pre-camp.
Yeah, pre-camp used to begin officially when the water was turned on, which is somewhere between May 10th to the 15th. But John's been, now that John has a year-round house up there by the Narrows, he's able to, he usually comes in the beginning of May and starts pecking away at things. But I got up there around May 15th, and shortly after, several alumni showed up, and Deb, of course, lives up there year round. So she got the kitchen rolling, and it was an interesting pre-camp because we were working on the plumbing in the mess hall. So we didn't have, we had running water, but we didn't have the drains set up. So we really didn't have running water. So putting meals together, Deb had to get real creative, and dishes we had to do in the girls' cabin. But we worked around it, and there was a good crew of alumni that showed up, and most of the pre-camp, well, I guess pre-camp to me is kind of split up, and there's work camp where the alumni are there, and if any counselors want to show up early, and then usually around May 25th, counselors start to show up, and then it's like staff training. So it's work camp and staff training are the two times of pre-camp. And but for work camp, it mainly consisted of getting the mess hall plumbed, and we put in a few new sinks. We had a tankless water heater installed, an ice machine, new dishwasher, shifted some fridges and freezers around, and painted a little in the kitchen, and just a lot of plumbing, really.
The thing that I think would surprise a lot of people, or at least it surprised me, I remember the first summer that I went up there for kind of a substantial portion of the pre-camp, is how cold it is up there. Because anybody that like campers, okay, they're used to going up there in June or July, and a lot of times it is very hot up in northern Minnesota in July. You're wearing shorts and a t-shirt, and you're still pretty warm. This is not that long. This is, May is not that much prior to that, and yet it is cold. I remember we would stay in the cabins on the hill, and gosh, I just remember sleeping, and I was wearing long pants, a puffy jacket. I was in my sleeping bag, and I think I still had to grab a wool blanket because those nights get really chilly. You're still in up there in Minnesota. May is, I think, unofficially still kind of a tale of winter up there. It feels like it. I don't know. Maybe that's just because I'm not from Minnesota.
No, ice out is like usually around May 10th, more or less. And yeah, guys are there just a few short days after that. And I know a lot of the I know the alumni still lake jumped. The water couldn't have been much higher than 40 degrees. Marcus and Latimer and Skeeter and Clarky, they all jumped in the lake. And who else? Mike Neal, he jumped in too. Those guys jumped in almost every day.
That deserves a plaque. We need to get their names inscribed. A big part of pre-camp is the staff training. So can you explain a little bit about what goes on in staff training? I think it's probably something that evolves a little bit each year, and I think it's a combination of some official training that you have to do, and then also just kind of some more informal training that goes on, and kind of teaching some new staff the culture of camp, I suppose would be a word for it. But can you just talk a little bit about the staff training?
Staff training is a couple weeks long, and it's a combination of technical skills like canoeing and packing for a trip and fire building, and it includes a 4-day staff trip. But then it's also behavioral management and group dynamics, risk management, and we have like a, I don't know, 90, 80-page staff manual, but we try to include the counselors. So each counselor gets a section that they'll be teaching so that there's a little peer teaching involved to get the counselors used to leading groups, and so that it's not always just John or I leading an activity. And we try to not just have it all be lecture-based, but some scenarios and experiential learning and hands-on and discussions and role playing and things like that. So there's a lot to cover, but both stuff that were covered required by the ACA, American Camping Association, and just that we know we need to cover because every year XYZ happens, so we need to be prepared for those things. And a lot of safety involved as well.
You mentioned the 4-day staff trip, which is another way of saying that everybody who's going to be a camp counselor for the summer before the campers arrive, all the staff, all the counselors take a canoe trip out, a 4-day canoe trip, sort of just as like a practice run, I suppose, right? Just kind of taking portages, navigating water, setting up camp, all of these things that then those counselors that are on the staff trip will then be doing as they lead the camping trips with the campers. Do you have any staff trip memories? Because at this point, you've been on quite a few staff trips. I don't know if you have a tally in your head, but I'm guessing you must have a couple good shining memories.
Ooh, well, it's the first one still stands out in my brain because it was my first year, my first ever Boundary Waters trip, and it was the year after Peter Grunewald, Charlie Steiner, Elliot Keller, and one of their friends went from camp to Hudson Bay. And Peter and Charlie were on staff the next year. So for my first year, they were kind of the two lead dogs. And they were so hardcore because they just had done that huge expedition. And they're like, we're just gonna, our staff trip is to whip us in shape. And they were super ambitious. And we covered so much ground. And it was a little miserable for me because all we did was just paddle from dusk till dawn, and they were so hardcore, and we didn't stop to smell the roses, in my first portages, and I was learning to stern and all this stuff, and they were so hardcore. But so I'll never forget that, and it's affected my trip philosophy now. Now I'm like kind of against pushing for miles because I'd rather experience things along the way and stop and smell the roses, as they say.
Yeah, my memories of the staff trips that I've been on pretty much every summer is just going. The staff trip is just this realization, stark, harsh realization of how out of shape, meaning trail
Yeah.
shape, how out of shape you are, because
Exactly.
you go into it and you're it's in a lot of cases it's the first camping trip that you've taken, a canoeing trip that you've taken since the previous summer, right? So it's been at least 11 months, 12 months, if not more for people, if it's been multiple years since they've taken a canoe trip. And so you're excited and you have all these memories of just epic trips that you've been on, mileage that you've made, paddling through hard wind and all this stuff. And then
Yeah.
you get kind of usually it's like halfway through the first portage and you are just carrying the canoe or maybe you're double packing. And I've had several moments where I just get exhausted on the staff trip on the portage, and I'm thinking, "Wow, what the heck? Am I just really out of it here?" And then I'll turn the corner, and one of my staff friends will be right there, like on his, panting as well, kind
Yeah.
of exhausted. So we're all going through the same thing. Everybody realizes, "Wow, we're so out of shape." And I think that
Yeah.
that echoes your sentiment of I don't think the staff trip, I have not led a staff trip in a number of years, but I would be a proponent of not necessarily doing it to make miles. You have to remember it is the purpose is educational, and you're there to teach the other staff, the counselors that have never led a trip before, how to do it. I think that that works better at a slow pace rather than making miles. For one thing, why what's the point of making miles on the staff trip, right? I don't know what the larger objective there would be other than to say that you've made a lot of miles, but like I said, that's not the purpose of it. So yeah,
Stroke your ego.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess just
Relive the glory days.
yeah, something. But then that loses sight of the main principle of camp, which is that camp is for the camper, right? And so the staff trip
Yeah.
then should be for you to get ready for the campers to arrive.
Yeah.
But anyway, so pre-camp gets this year, pre-camp gets camp all ready to go, and the cabins are ready. The boats that are stored for the winter, they get taken out, the canoes and stuff, everything's ready. And then the campers arrive. Talk to me a little bit about just that middle phase, the big phase of the summer when the campers are there. I know that there were a lot of great trips this summer. There were a lot of really fun in camp and out of camp activities. So I don't know where you want to dive in here to start going into some of this, but I'd love to hear.
Yeah, well, move-in day is certainly a distinct chapter in the summer, and it's always super exciting to see everyone again and some new faces and see how some of those young teens have changed. You know, they've grown a foot and or
not grown a foot, grown a foot. Not, they don't have 3 feet. They have we're talking height here.
Yes, grown 12 inches taller in height.
Yes.
Thanks. Yes. And also, you see a lot of kids catch the fitness bug at camp. And so they spent the off season putting on some muscle, and they come back all puffed up. And you're like, wow, what have you been eating? Eggs and iron for breakfast? That's also cool to see. And just the excitement is like palpable. And so that's always exciting. And I've gotten to know a lot of the parents over the years too. So it's fun to catch up with them. And then camp is rolling and we have wilderness survival training, or I guess wilderness tripping skills training, and couple in camp days, and then they already hit the trail. So the first round trips are 4 to 6 days, and that's again the campers use that to get the rust off of them, much like the counselors get the rust off during the staff trip. And then they're back in camp for a week, which we call the window. It's kind of the middle bulk of camp. That's we do the bulk of our in-camp program. Then they head out for their longer trips, which usually the second round trips are, of course, further and more remote. And I don't know, the better of the two trips, because just talking to campers over the years, you know, when they stay for 4 weeks, the second round trip is really their favorite time usually. And then they get back and it's the Olympics. And then they head home and we repeat.
Yeah, I agree this about the second round trip. It just makes sense, right? The first trip, yeah. In the case of a lot of kids, if campers haven't been to camp before, that first trip is just they're learning how to do it. They're learning the, like I said, the culture of camp. They're learning the ethic of the like minimalism, like leave no trace type of camping that we practice. And then once that is all learned and internalized, it can kind of become second nature on the second trip. And so rather than just being focused on making sure that they're doing everything right and learning everything, they can kind of just, I guess, enjoy, for lack of a better term, they can just enjoy the trail a little bit more on that second trip now that they know how to do everything, or at least know, you know, a little bit more than they did on that first trip. So yeah, the second trip is always, that'd be an interesting article actually for the blog or something about like the second trip compared to the first trip.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go back to something you said when you were talking about move-in day. This is something that maybe we could even open it up to comments and viewer suggestions, because I am always interested in learning new ideas for icebreakers, for icebreaker games, ways to get to know everybody. Because on that first day or on that second day, you know, some kids are, especially if they've been to camp before, they might be used to just everything. They're chatty and everything, but then other kids are shy. It's obviously it's a new experience, so they might be a little more reserved, a little more introverted. What is your preferred icebreaker? I don't mean just for camp at large, although we do that at the fire circle, but even just in your cabin, you know, getting to know your cabin mates. Do you have any go-to The one that I always think is like Two Truths and a Lie. That's a game that people play where you say, tell me two things about you that are true and one that's not true, and I'll try to guess which is which. But I know there are many, many more out there, more ways to get campers to open up and be a little more comfortable with this new community. So what's your go-to?
Well, it's kind of a it kind of a, is a trickling process. When they first get there, they don't spend a lot of time in the cabin, so it's a lot of sports and activities, which I think are a little easier to get to know someone when you're playing alongside of them versus maybe just sitting in your cabin. I don't know, when people's blood is flowing and they're having fun shooting hoops and stuff, it's a little easier to build a little camaraderie with someone. And then the first few days of camp, they sit together with their cabins. So you've got the social hour of each meal to talk to each other and get to know each other a little bit. And then the first few evening programs at night in the mess hall are some sort of get to know you, whether it's two truths and a lie or like never have I ever sort of games. We introduce ourselves at the fire circle that very first dinner and where we're from. And then the other one other thing we like to do early on is the gong show, which gets everyone up on stage doing some sort of talent that they know. And we try to have some veteran campers or some counselors lead it, and they're usually being silly and goofy on the stage, and it really breaks the ice for kids to show, especially to the new kids, to show everyone that it's okay to let loose and be a little goofy, in front of everyone. And a lot of people are fearful of being on the stage and like public speaking and whatnot, but when we do the gong show, it really helps to, I guess, relieves. If a kid can work up the courage to go on stage, which everyone has to, so they kind of have to, they have a good feeling afterwards. And so it's a trickle out process, but still there's nothing, the deepest way you can possibly get to know someone at camp is being on a trip with them. So, and those go out already the, fourth, fifth day of camp.
Let's explain very briefly for maybe some new listeners what the gong show is. It is a talent show, essentially, although as we always say at camp, no talent is enough talent. So t talent show would talent would be in quotations, I suppose. But it's a talent show at the mess hall where campers go up on stage and they can perform in an individual act, or I suppose they could perform with a group if they wanted to, but any sort of whatever they want, whether it's a music act or a monologue, or I mean, there's
Anything from eating a banana to playing Mozart on the piano. There's a whole spectrum of things.
yeah, and or you could do both at the same time, maybe even, right? That's the wonderful nature of the gong show. But anyway, they do it until a distinguished panel of judges deems that's enough, and they will gong them. They'll hit a gong, and that means the act is over. And what was your, if you could remember, what was your, what's something that you have done at the gong show? Or if you can't remember something that you have done, what is just a memorable gong show act that you've seen over the years?
Well, history kind of repeats itself. When a kid doesn't really have or can't think of anything to do up on stage, they'll eat a banana or eat an apple or something like that. That happens every year, every session. But my favorite are always the piano or the guitar. Some kid goes up there and plays just something crazy. I think it takes a lot of courage to play music in front of people on a stage. So those are always my favorite.
I've got to give a shout out to two friends of mine that were counselors when I was a counselor, Chris Smith and Zach Scott. I believe it was those two, although it's been a while ago. But I remember there was a Gong Show at one point. They might have been campers. I don't even know if they were counselors yet, but their act together simultaneously was they went up on stage. They did a headstand. Somebody helped them so they could do a headstand. And in their hands, they swung socks. So you're just like swinging socks around. You're doing a headstand. And at the same time, they were reading Shakespeare. So if you can imagine all of these things happening at one time, you have people that are doing two guys doing a headstand, swinging socks around in their hands, and then reading Shakespeare. That was the gong. That was their act. I think that that's probably something you're hoping that the judges gong pretty quickly, because I don't know how long you want to be doing that upside down, doing a headstand.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that. That act. Great act. Shout out to Chris and Zach if they are listening.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, which activities were the most popular? Aside from, we talked about the gong show, but there were a number of activities this summer that campers were involved in. Of course, there's in-camp program, there's day trips that go out and do all sorts of activities elsewhere. So can you talk a little bit about what some of the activities that people really seemed stoked about? What were they?
Well, again, pickleball. We got that three pickleball courts there. Those are going all day long, you know, except for meals basically. And so you're always hearing the that sound.
That's the pickleball sound for anybody that's listening that might not have been. That's the sound of the pickleball bouncing. That was a good impression.
All day long. Bill Bergman's Pickleplex, we call it. Gaga ball is usually big, especially for the 10, 11 year olds.
Okay. I want to stop you here. This was new to me. I just learned about this, this summer, because I was up there after the campers had left and I saw the pit where Gaga ball is played, and I had never heard of Gaga ball. And so I'm sure there are people listening, maybe alums and whatnot, that have never heard about this. So can you explain what Gaga ball is?
Yeah, so you're playing in an octagon that's about, the octagon is just made out of plywood sheets that are like 3-4 feet tall. So your octagon's maybe like, I don't know, say 15 feet by 15 feet-ish. And starts with like a volleyball in the center. There's anywhere from usually like 2 to 10 kids. And the ball starts in the center and they just have to like slap the ball on the ground and hit someone below the knees. So it's sort of like dodgeball, but it's all, it's got to be all below the knees. So you can't pick it up and throw it. You got to slap it and you can bounce it off the wall. But as soon as it hits someone below the knees, they're out and they go to the outside and wait for the next game. Or if you hit the ball and it leaves the octagon pit, you're out. So it's like a really safe version of dodgeball.
Is this a camp creation or is this a known game that I'm just out of the loop about?
It's a known game.
Okay.
Yeah. Popular in physical education classes and other camps.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, we used to tip over lunch tables in the gym and play it.
It sounds kind of like people from the 90s might remember wall ball, which was a game that we used to play on the paddleball court, which isn't there anymore. The paddleball, if you remember, it used to have that cement wall, that kind of wall in the center. And so what you would do with wall ball is you would have two tennis balls. You'd have a lot of people on the wall ball court. It'd be a crowded field and you'd have two tennis balls going at the same time. And so people would throw the tennis ball at the wall and then it would bounce off the wall and kind of bounce back into the crowd of people that was running around, scurrying around. And if one of the tennis balls hit you, you were out. So it's kind of the same idea, right? Like the ball bouncing off of a structure. And then if it tags you, you're gone. I like the idea of doing the below the knee thing. I like the idea of using a volleyball that's a little softer than a tennis ball probably,
yeah.
But sounds like maybe something that, if anybody's listening from the 1990s, maybe it sounds like it's kind of like the evolution of maybe what wall ball used to be.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice. Cause kids love those evasion games, where there's a where each other is the target, but the world of physical education classes is trying to go away from that a little bit, because the whole dodgeball to the head thing. But yeah, it's a nice safe way, and kids like it. So, but then basketball is always popular at camp because it's centrally located, the court, and it's anyone can shoot hoops or play lightning. What else?
Is Foursquare still a popular activity? Because there were years, it might have predated your time as a counselor, but there were a few years where Foursquare was the activity. It was kind of like what pickleball has become now. It was before pickleball was a thing at camp. But oh my gosh, I'm sure there are people listening that remember Foursquare being the obsession. We'd play it on the tennis court, we'd play it on the basketball court, we'd play it indoors at the rec hall. It was just, there was
Yeah.
so much Foursquare.
They still played it quite a bit in the rec hall. Yeah, especially rainy days. It was popular. I saw a lot of kids playing Foursquare in the rec hall. But we pushed breakfast back a half an hour to 8:30, and so that we could have some workout clubs in the morning. So we had a running club, a weightlifting club, which we called Weight Dogs. A portage club, which no one ever went to because who wants to portage at 7 in the morning? But and a fishing club, which sometimes would go fishing early morning. So we had a lot of guys lifting weights for the Weight Dogs club. We had actually quite a few running too. Running and the lifting clubs were pretty popular. So, or you could just sleep in a little extra. So that was something new we tried this year. And especially at the beginning of the sessions when we were in camp more, it was pretty popular. Of course, when we're out on trips, there's no clubs there. So, and then when you get back, there's the Olympics. But yeah, that was nice. Nice to try to instill some healthy habits, morning routines in some of the kids, and the counselors liked it too. So.
Now, this is a massive shift from years ago because I remember trying to do a running club and there would be nobody interested because sleep is so valuable. If you've had a really active day, you're exhausted. You want to sleep every minute that you can if you're a camper. So it was really hard to get people to want to do anything before breakfast, anything active like running the road or something like that. So what do you attribute this massive cultural shift to where people are actually getting up before breakfast to do, like you said, all these different clubs, lifting clubs, running clubs?
Well, like I said, we pushed breakfast back a half an hour so that you could sleep in a little bit and still get a good workout in, and that made all the difference really for campers and counselors. They could get up rather than getting up at 7 to run, now they could get up at 7:30.
So n you said nobody was interested in Portage Club. Tell me what would Portage Club even entail? Like, where do you portage? What is the is this just to get in shape for the trail, or is this just something that someone just tried to do this that loves portaging?
Oh, that would be Brian Helverson. He's always been a functional fitness guy. He doesn't like lifting weights or just running to run. He wants to do it for, like, he loves paddling as a workout. He loves biking as a workout. He likes cross-country skiing as a workout, something that's you're doing something rather than just lifting a heavy chunk of metal, in a building. So he would wake up every morning and he'd portage. That's his workout. He'd take a canoe, walk to the Narrows and back. Well, he tried to get some kids to come with him, and it was a tough sell.
Yeah, I can imagine that'd be a tough sell. It'd be kind of fun though if people would get really into it. Some of the campers would probably be too young to carry a canoe, but you could pack a little Duluth pack and somebody
Yeah.
could portage that or something like that. We'll see. We'll see. Maybe next summer, maybe the Portage Club will get revitalized a little bit and have a larger audience.
Yeah, well, they love to practice canoe flipping. They don't like to practice portaging as much, so Perhaps a canoe flipping club.
Oh, that's a good idea. One thing I want to ask you about, I know because I love rock climbing, I know that there was some rock climbing or climbing, I guess, that went on, not necessarily on real rock, but tell me a little bit about the climbing activities from this past summer.
We took the 4-weekers down to Duluth to Vertical Endeavors and spent a couple hours there climbing. And so there were some auto belays and some of the workers could belay them. And then there was some bouldering. And we spent the night at Bagley Campground in Duluth. And then the next day, woke up, went up the North Shore to Teteguchee State Park. Did a little hiking to some lookouts and the beach and skipped some rocks and then headed back to camp. So it was a nice little overnight trip.
Yeah, when you say North Shore, we mean the North Shore of Lake Superior.
Yep.
And can you explain a little bit to people listening in case they've never done that trip, they've never been to the North Shore, or maybe they were even at camp this summer, but they didn't take that trip to the climbing and go up the North Shore. Can you explain a little bit of why the North Shore is so special? Because I kind of think it's really one of the gems of the entire US, if not the world, just in terms of a beautiful landscape and wilderness. Can you talk a little bit about the North Shore?
Yeah, it goes from Duluth to Canada. So it's the southwest corner of Lake Superior, all the way up to Canada. It's the North Shore of Lake Superior is what everyone calls it. And it's super beautiful and scenic. And I think it's like around maybe 250 miles, 300 miles or so. And it's a lot of bluffs and lighthouses, and there's state parks dotting the whole coast that you can visit, and cutesy little towns and Betty's grandma's pies and some harbors full of sailboats, and it's just super beautiful. It's like a junior version, I like to think, of that route in California
Highway
along the
1 up the
coast.
coast.
Yeah, it's like a junior version of that, I like to think. And it also runs, I guess, parallel to the Superior Hiking Trail, which camp takes, which you would think the Superior Hiking Trail would be along a highway the whole time, but they do an excellent job of folding that in so that when you're on the Superior Hiking Trail, you really don't know there's this scenic interstate bustling with tourists, nonstop. Next to you, so you still get this wilderness feel on that hiking trail.
Yeah, we'll have to do a separate episode at some point about the Superior Hiking Trail because I think you could certainly devote a whole conversation to it. It's one of my personal favorite trips. I've probably done, I don't know, like 7 or 8 different Superior Hiking Trail trips. I've done
Jeez.
a lot of hiking on. I love that trail. So we'll talk about it separately. But what's interesting when you're talking about the North Shore trip is that is a trip for camp that I took when I was like 10, I think, 9. I remember driving up to the North Shore. I remember going climbing. We didn't climb. It wasn't at the Vertical Endeavors necessarily, but we did some climbing and then we went to check out Lake Superior. So, and that was a long time ago. So this is kind of a tried and true camp trip. Camp has been doing this North Shore trip for quite a while now, and it still seems to be a highlight for campers every summer.
Yeah, we hadn't done it in a while, at least since I started. So it'd been at least 8 years, but we wanted to bring it back, and kids really seem to like it. So we'll hopefully do that again next year. Yeah.
Explain to me a little bit about, or explain to listeners, I should say, about how the summer, the camp session kind of winds down because we talked about when campers arrive and the icebreakers that they do, and then the first round of trips. Talk to me about the other bookend, right? When the session is getting ready to close, those last few days of camp, what goes on there? And specifically from this past summer, what do you remember?
Well, the week four of camp is they get back from their trips on that Monday, Tuesday, and they leave Saturday. But so they get back, we have trip stories at the Fire Circle Tuesday. And then Wednesday, the Olympics begin.
The Camp Olympics.
The Camp Olympics, CV Olympics. So two veteran campers are chosen to be Olympic captains, and they sit down together and behind closed doors and pick their Olympic teams. And so the entire camp was split into two teams. And then we have just an opening ceremony where we light the Olympic torch and have the national anthem. And then we have a big scoreboard. We have two Olympic commissioners from Mount Olympus sent down to be the commissioners and the hosts of the games. And there's all sorts of individual and team sports and water sports, land and water sports and canoe races. And then we have that over several days. There's big team games like basketball, volleyball, Skrabnitz, soccer. And then it concludes on Friday with the obstacle course, which is usually around 20 activities. It's like a big relay race where almost every activity in camp is put on display. Each kid does like one or two of those activities. And that obstacle course concludes with the Olympic captains in a fire building contest for who can boil a soup can full of soapy water the fastest.
Here's a question for you, because I love the obstacle course. So I always loved it, whether I'm a camper participating in it, whether I'm a counselor overseeing it. I just love it. And I love the various lead changes that inevitably happen throughout the obstacle course with the different teams gaining an advantage and then getting overtaken and gaining it back. Quiz question: what is the most important event, in your opinion, in the obstacle course?
I would say I think the casting, fishing, they have to cast like just a weight with no hook into a Grumman canoe from like, I don't know, maybe 40, 50 feet away. And it's the most important to me because it's near the end of the whole thing. And I've seen it take one cast and I've seen it take like 10 minutes and it's just pulling hair because it's all that's left after that is tent building and nail pound, and then it's the fire build. So if you're able to get successfully do that, oh, there's also a few there's frisbee and kicking a goal, but it's always a bottleneck there. And if you're able to get it quick, your Olympic captain down the line will get a little bit of a head start.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. So if people haven't been up there to see it, if you can visualize it, there's a canoe. It's on Pine Stadium. It's on the soccer field. And there's a canoe on the field. And there is a person standing with a fishing rod, probably what, like, I don't know, 15 meters away, something like
Yeah.
that, right? So it's a distance away. And on the end of the fishing line is, like you said, is a sinker, a weight. So it doesn't have a hook on it, but it has some heft. And so the objective is to cast that sinker with the fishing rod, and it has to land inside the canoe that's 15 meters away or so, give or take. And so it's a casting accuracy is kind of the name of the game, which is really hard because it's not something that you ever practice specifically. I mean, yeah, you go out fishing and you try to make a good cast, but rarely are you sitting there kind of like drilling, right? I want to make sure I cast within this 15-foot space, however long the canoe is. And as you said, it can sometimes campers can cast that sinker and it lands in the canoe. Boom. It lands on the first cast, and sometimes it just takes a long, long time. I don't know. If people have a yard and they're listening to this and they have a fishing rod, go out and practice and just like give yourself a little target and try to cast and hit the target. It's really hard. So I was going to say that is the kind of the big secret is that the fire build is the most exciting, undoubtedly, of the whole obstacle course. But I actually think the most important event is the canoe cast. I think probably second with the tent build, though, because I've seen a lot of tent builds, meaning for people listening that just it's like a race to see who can set up the tent and get inside and then take down the tent the quickest. That's an event of the obstacle course. And oh, it's just, you'd be surprised a lot of times with how much trouble some campers have with putting up the tent. Maybe they, on the trail, they weren't in charge of putting up the tent. Maybe they were going and finding firewood instead or something. So they don't maybe have as much experience putting up the tent. Certainly not when it's under the, you know, under the clock, when they have yeah. to do it quickly.
Everyone's watching.
Everyone's watching. A little secret also, I don't know if this is as much of an issue nowadays, but years ago, it used to be the Olympic captain's responsibility to supply the tent and to check the tent beforehand. And that did not always happen. So sometimes the campers would go to make the tent and they would find that they're missing a tent pole or a tent stake or something like that. So you can't, by, you know, you literally cannot complete the task of setting up the tent if you don't have all the poles. And so there'd be a significant time deduction there. So the tent build is also kind of the equalizer of an event for the obstacle course. I love it. Well, and we'll have a separate episode about the Superior Hiking Trail. Maybe we'll have a separate episode about the Camp Olympics or the obstacle course as well. But it's fun. Just like anything at camp, the obstacle course is, it's competitive, but it is also all in good fun. And a lot of times it's just, you know, it's spirits are good afterwards. Everybody has fun. Everybody played a part in the obstacle course, regardless of whether your team won or lost. And I think my team pretty much always lost, including when I was a captain. Always lost, but it doesn't matter. It's always fun. The obstacle course is great. Everybody has a good time. It's a good way to kind of figuratively end the camp sports or activity season, I think.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And that's Friday. And then later that night is we have a banquet where we say which campers got on the plaques and which who got senior bushwhacker, junior bushwhacker, big man, and thank the staff and thank the cooks, and just like a closing banquet. And then after that is initiation, where new campers get initiated into the ranks, and veteran campers can sometimes rank up.
And then the next morning, campers are going home and they're sitting in airports ready to go back to their hometown. And I always felt like, I mean, I was always up there after camp ended, but I always felt like that must be a really strange feeling for those campers to be sitting in an airport or to be arriving in an airport in their hometown and think, gosh, just 24 hours ago, I was at camp, different community. I was in the middle of the North Woods. Talk about a shock of, kind of different settings. That must have been something.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because some of them are a little homesick, and they're, you know, I can't wait to see my mom or something. Their parents show up, they give them a hug, say hi, how you doing, and then the parent can't get them out of there, and the kid wants to show them around, and they're just hanging out, and you look over and you see a camper with his family. It's like, you guys are still here. Don't you guys have to hit the road? And the parents are like, he doesn't want to leave. And you know, it's funny. It's like, they just get that small little dose of their parents, and then sometimes they don't want to leave.
Yeah. That's great. That's the kind of camper, you know, we want campers that are hungry to stay there. That's awesome. I love to hear that. The season concludes and then we get into this last phase. We don't have to spend a whole lot of time on this because it's not, it's just kind of logistical in nature. It's just closing up camp, but we do have this third phase of post camp. I shouldn't sell it short. There's a lot of exciting stuff that happens at post camp as well, though. The men's and women's cross country team from University of Minnesota comes, for example, for a multi-day retreat. A lot of alumni come during this period. A lot of families decide to take trips, take outfitting trips and whatnot. But it's a very different scene on the Camp Peninsula during post camp than it is during the the other phases when campers are there or when everybody's excited for the campers to arrive soon. What goes on or what went on in post camp this season?
Well, everyone is riding the high of the summer. You know, it feels there's a huge sense of accomplishment throughout the whole place. And so first everyone gets a day off, and then we circle up and we have a debrief and go over the highs and lows of the summer and what we can do to improve the program for next year. And then it's just a much more low-key version of pre-camp without the staff training. So we put the boats away, and we have some projects this year. I think a year or two ago, we got a sprayer painter. I don't know what you call it. Air compressor sprayer painter thing for painting cabins. And it's super slick. You know, instead of using a brush, it used to take 3-4 guys a whole day to paint one cabin. Now it takes, I think you can do a coat in about an hour and a half for one cabin. And so we painted 10 cabins. And we painted a few in pre-camp. So I think we painted a total of 13 cabins this year with that thing. We also, a lot of cleanup, you know, taking down the sports equipment. We write stories for the paddle posts. We fill out report cards for the campers on how they did that summer. And do some tree work. We removed another acre of balsam, dead and diseased balsam, south of the volleyball court. Odds and ends here and there, but it's a nice time because, like I said, everyone's feeling a sense of accomplishment. There's not such a pressure to get stuff done because in pre-camp, there's this impending date of campers arriving, so you know you need stuff done by then. Post-camp, you're like, you know, if we don't get to it, we'll pick back up in the spring with that. So
the weirdest feeling, I think, as a staff member, similarly to the weird feeling of campers sitting in the airport ready to go home, for the staff, the weirdest feeling is the morning after the campers leave. When you're just walking the paths, right? You're walking up to the mess hall, or you're walking down up to the hill or down to the mess hall. And other people have commented on this as well. I know Dorothy Benke used to say that it was a strange feeling. It's just,
yeah. She stopped by this year, by the way.
Oh, that's great. Good. Yeah. It's just the strangest feeling to have these paths that, you know, normally are filled with campers and voices and inside jokes and all that, just the kind of the energy of camp. And then all of a sudden it's not there. And it just feels so vacant. It feels like, oh, there should be voices coming from these paths, like, and laughter and excitement. And it's just, it's like eerily quiet.
It's sad.
It is sad. It's a little sad because those campers are gone for the season, gone home, and it feels like they should be there, right?
Yeah.
It's like camp is best when all the campers are there and it's lively and all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I just found your dad, Bill, sitting at the pickleball court in a lawn chair, just staring at the court the day after. I'm like, what's up, Bill? You all right? He's like, it's so quiet. It's weird.
Yeah.
He was just contemplating, you know, it was like, it's strange.
It's almost like if you think of a, I don't know, like a weird analogy, like think of like something that's normally busy, like an interstate or something, then to suddenly have no cars, right? I mean, this is it's straight. It's like there should be sound coming from here.
Yeah. It's like walking through a mall after it's closed, you know, it's just like eerily quiet and strange without people.
Yeah. I agree. Well, listen, I want to give you a second I want you to announce kind of information about registration for next year, dates, trips, because the best time to get excited about next season is right now, right at the end of this season. But before we go, I came up with 5 questions that I want to ask you as a lightning round about this past season. So I want you to give the the kind of the first thing that comes to mind, the short answer. And if nothing comes to mind, you know, we can just move on to the next question. But here are the five questions. So question number one of the lightning round. I don't know how many trips you went on personally this summer. So
three.
Okay, you went on three trips. Good. You'll be able to answer this. What was the best trail meal that you had all summer?
Fish from Crooked Lake.
What kind of fish?
They were bass. Yeah.
Second question. Either a fish that you caught or maybe something that a camper caught, but just what was the biggest fish that you, or a big fish, maybe not biggest, but just a big fish that's like really memorable from this summer?
Well, that same trip, my crew was nailing the fish and they got a 30-inch pike and a 29-inch pike within about a half hour of each other. And it was kind of became an inside joke of the trip because we were catching a lot of plackers, which is our names for big fish that has the potential to be on the wall. And I was at the campsite and they were across the lake fishing and I just hear placker, 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 you know, getting closer and closer. It was like how cop sirens, the Doppler effect gets closer, you know, it's like placker, 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 placker.
I love it. Third question. Name something, whether it's a certain reference or a joke or a phrase or even just a word. Something from this past summer that only people who were up at camp would get.
Him.
Okay. I don't know what that means. So there you go. People listening will know what that means, but I
well,
do not.
I think it originally is from a rap song. Some guy was saying he's him, you know, like capital H, him. And then some athletes caught on, like LeBron James and some other guys, you know, they would make a big shot or whatever and point to me and say, I'm him. Well, it's became this pop culture thing. And so it basically means you're the top dog. And okay. So it was the camper word this year. I'm telling you, you know, he's him. Someone would catch a big fish and everyone would go him. Or our nurse went on a trip, Elena, and she caught some fish and she was a beast on the trail. So she was her.
There's always something every summer. There's always word or phrase that kind of lives within that specific group of people that summer.
Oh,
that's
absolutely.
A good answer.
That was absolutely him.
Fourth question. A piece of gear that you got the most out of this summer. Now, I want to put a little note here. I don't want you to say a fishing rod and I don't want you to say rain gear because I think those are kind of obvious go-to answers. So, piece of gear that you got the most out of this summer.
Man, I love me my hat and sunglasses.
That's two. You got to choose.
I got to choose. If I had to choose one.
Unless you can attach the sunglasses to the hat and make it one incognito headpiece.
I'd have to just choose sunglasses because I hate squinting.
There you go.
And it makes a hot, sunny day feel less hot, sunny.
Good answer. Last but not least, your favorite lake that you visited this summer on a trip, and why was it your favorite?
Crooked Lake. It's huge. It's full of fish. It's at least 2 days from an entry point, so there's no one up there. And it's just beautiful. You're along the U.S.-Canadian border, so there's a little mystique to it. And there's no portaging. Yeah, so you're just 2-3 days on a big, giant lake full of fish. Can't beat it.
Great spot. Yeah. For anybody listening, hopefully this was a fun trip down the memory lane of the recent summer season. Tell people about next summer. If they're listening to this, they want to get registered. What are the dates? What trips are lined up? What do people need to know about the summer of 2024?
The session one dates are June 9th to July 6th. Then session two is July 7th to August 3rd. So that's like pushed up 2 days from this summer, just calendar wise. And there'll be a lot of the same trips, GP, of course, and Isle Royale. and Spear Hiking Trail, along with Boundary Waters trips. We're planning to head into the Quetico again. We have some big group of guys that just went on the Quetico, so we're hoping to get them up into the Wabakimi Provincial Park, I believe is his full name. Up in Canada, it's about a 12-hour drive from camp, and then you take a train into the park and you canoe a loop for about 12 days. So that's going to be an expedition. There's been talk of a hiking expedition out west, but we might just do Wabakimi and not that, because we can't pull too many people away at once. But otherwise, I mean, we can keep the spirit alive here on our podcasts. We have a YouTube channel, Facebook and Instagram. We post regularly. We send out a quarterly newsletter. So you can get on that list by emailing me, alex@campvoyager.com. And we're hoping to do some reunions this year, some gatherings, perhaps this spring. Usually we hit up Chicago. We went to Colorado last year, Indianapolis, kind of wherever there's some pockets of alumni. So anyone's willing to host one, we like doing it at people's houses, but otherwise we'll do it at parks or event centers or rock walls or something like that. So.
Yeah, it's never too early to sign up for next year. It's never too early to make some plans for next season or for this year in terms of, like you said, meetings, meeting with alums, camp shows, all of that stuff. And if anybody's listening, if anybody has listened to this entire podcast, they've made it this far for this episode, then it's probably someone that we want to hear from because they're probably pretty into this and we love that.
Yeah.
And I've had some people reach out to me that saying that they went to camp and they'd love to share their story on the podcast. We are definitely open to that. So feel free to get in touch. Tell us if you've got a good trip story that would make for good audio, or if you had a great experience at camp and you'd like to be a guest on the podcast, reach out, email the camp website, or send us a message on Instagram. There's a number of different ways you could get in touch, but we definitely want to feature guests that have cool stories to tell. And it sounds like there's a lot of people out there that do. So please reach out.
Yeah, and we're always looking for more help throughout the summer. Any volunteers who want to help with some projects? There's always work camp in May 15th to May 25th, but we'd also like some guys trickling in throughout the summer to stay in the bunkhouse for a week at a time, which used to be the girls' cabin, and help out there. You can stay at camp, eat meals in the mess hall in exchange for putting in a few hours of working on some projects daily. And you can take a canoe and use our gear and relive or experience the Voyager summer camp tradition.
Thanks for listening to this recap episode. If you did not catch all of those dates that Alex mentioned for next summer, you can find them on the camp website. Be sure to get in touch with camp on Instagram throughout this year. And come back soon because we will have another podcast episode coming out shortly. In the meantime, we'll see you on the trail.